Wessex Press, an imprint of Gazadine Books, is a premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They are also our publishers for One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, A New Generation on Sherlock Holmes. It was edited by several of the Baker Street Babes and contains a foreword by Laurie R. King, the author of the Mary Russell series. Another brilliant book published with Gazadine Books is Matthias Boström and Matt Laffey's Sherlock Holmes and Conan Doyle in the Newspapers. If you'd like to know more about Wessex Press, Gazadine Books, or our publication, please go to www.wessexpress.com.
The Baker Street Journal is a leading Sherlockian publication written by the readers for the readers. It contains both academic articles and light, fun reading for any sort of Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. If you are a fan of The Great Detective and the other works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and you'd like to read new and exciting writings by Sherlockians, or even find information on how to get published in the journal, please visit their website, www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland, they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 my
skin tight jeans feels okay. So for anyone who doesn't know, before Sherlock was commissioned as it currently is, they did shoot an unaired pilot, very standard for shows to do. It has some similarities. It does basically tell the same story of A Study in Pink, which obviously is based on A Study in Scarlet. In some ways is closer to A Study in Scarlet, which we can talk about. But there are some significant differences. And we've had a lot of requests lately to go back and talk about Sherlock Season 1, from people who listen to the podcast and follow us on social media. And so we are going to go through the episodes one by one, but we decided that we could not leave out the unaired pilot, which you can get your hands on. It's on the first season DVD, and we do recommend it. It's a very interesting experience to watch.
Yes.
I use the word in the most general possible way. Okay. So, first of all, big change, it's only an hour long. And yes. So what that means is that, because if I'm remembering correctly, which you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, they had originally conceived of Sherlock as something that was going to have like 6 episodes that would be an hour long, as opposed to 3 that are kind of feature length. And so this is one of the biggest things is this obviously moves faster because it's only an hour long and it's missing some strong elements of the actual episode, notably Mycroft is not in it. So we'll talk through it, I guess.
Should we just sort of go chronologically? Because, I mean, even the beginning is really interesting, especially compared to what happened in the study in Pink, because we don't have the action shot. We don't have the nightmare. We just have John waking up. And so it's lacking a bit of context, but at the same time, I think it opens things up a bit more than it does in studying Pink, because he wakes up and we see that he's had a nightmare, and then he opens, he sits down, opens the drawer, takes out his laptop, and looks at the gun. And that gives a much more open notion of, what is this gun? Obviously, it is the reference to, his service time, but at the same time, is it for reasons of suicide that he keeps it there? And it's, of course, already, foreshadowing what's going to happen. So this one shot of the gun, I find, is much more telling than the beginning of Study in Pink, where we have the context. We have the dream. So we know exactly what happened. So
it's quite literally Chekhov's gun, which we always mention on the podcast. That's like the Baker Street Babes drinking game. We mention Chekhov's gun. But quite obviously, we see a gun very much in the pilot. We see the gun. The gun will go off before the end. It's the thing that happens, which clearly none of this is a spoiler to anyone. If you are listening to this, you know what happens. So yeah, so we have a John Watson, kind of a similar situation. Obviously, we kind of get the same idea, although, like you said, in a more open kind of way, that this guy is not doing so great and probably shouldn't have a gun, legally speaking.
Definitely shouldn't have that gun.
Yeah, and the apartment is even more depressing than it is in the real
yes, it is.
First
yes, episode. It's terribly, like, there's this green light. It's almost, you know, it's almost like prison light. It's terrible.
I was
it's
about
perfect.
To say, yeah, like
perfect.
He looks like he's in jail.
Yes, for visualizing the depression. I mean, it's so intense. And I'm sort of sad that this is, you know, getting lost. A lot of things which I really love about the pilot, I'm quite sad that they didn't take them on for the actual
it's
episode.
It's interesting because it's like you gain some positive things, but then you lose some of the emotional...
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you get a more depressed John Watson as opposed to a more traumatized John Watson. Because when we're given the nightmares, it's a much more in-your-face trauma thing versus just a kind of a sad guy that we're meeting at the beginning of the pilot.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have, obviously, general similarities to... one thing we don't get is we don't get scenes of the suicides.
Yes.
Supposed suicides. So we don't see... that very kind of striking sequence where people are kind of weeping and taking pills and we don't know what's happening.
Yeah, that's true. That's quite...
Yeah.
We only learned that at the end. Which is... I mean, which also makes sense because then it's much closer again to a study in Scarlet where we have no idea what's happening.
Right.
Until the very end. I mean, when they find the pills, even then we don't know what's happening because Sherlock Holmes hasn't bothered to explain it to us yet. So,
right.
So it's much closer in many ways to the actual story. Which also, I mean, of course, if you think of the first meeting of Mike Stamford, which I still love and I'm very sad about, the Criterion closing.
Yes.
Is in there. So it is, in fact, where they actually in real life in the story met. and talked about Sherlock Holmes also looking for a flatmate. I can understand that they didn't have the budget to do it again for Study in Pink, but it's a love that they're actually in the place. I mean, that's just part of the nerdy translation of the text into the series.
Right. We have, and I mean, that scene is similar between John and Stamford, kind of, who'd want me for a flatmate? You're the second person who said that to me. And then we have a cut to the morgue.
Yes.
And that is not exactly the same, although that one got translated pretty much. Because, I mean, how are you going to improve on, you know... Sherlock Holmes beating a corpse with a writing
have him wear dress pants in the real thing. It's really funny because I just noticed that he's actually in the first shot. He's actually wearing the purple shirt of sex, but he's so skinny in that moment that it doesn't even...
yeah.
Like, it's nowhere it's going to be.
Right.
In the real series, but it's the same shirt. But it also just noticed it because the light is like they have a different filter, so the colors are different in the pilot.
That's true.
So you don't see, you know, the color quite as vividly as you do in the series,
but it is
the first time we see Sherlock. He's actually wearing the shirt.
Yes. That's a good point. I mean, we can't complain about that. And I mean, obviously, through one of the big differences is obviously that we have a more casual Sherlock Holmes. We have the coat, but we have a man in jeans, and we have a guy who dresses a lot more like a normal, you know, late 20s, early 30s kind of guy.
Graduate
and,
student.
Yeah, yes. Very much so. And also, I think throughout, one of the big differences is directing. Like, lighting shots are different. There's not quite the same level of stylization, I would say, as a general comment. And you start to see that as you see some of these scenes, like the morgue, that are closer, you see the differences more vividly. Mm. So some of them are very similar, but maybe they don't have quite the same impact. Because obviously when we moved to the really iconic directing of the series one episodes as they were transmitted. Some of those shots are so vivid, and there are some in the pilot that we don't get, but also some in the series that obviously aren't in the pilot. So it's an interesting comparison.
Yeah. And what okay. What I absolutely love is the sort of the deduction later on of, and we have this cut back to the scene in St. Bart's, because the camera work is just. I prefer the pilot one to the pink one,
mm-hmm.
because it is much more focused on, I like it better than than the pink one.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously we meet Molly in this section, and there's kind of a similar thing with, you know, her and her sort of obvious kind of attempt to get Sherlock's attention and his kind of seeming oblivion to that, although obviously we find out later that he's aware of it and using it for his own purposes.
Yeah. Although I think that's also a general thing, is that Pilot Sherlock is less arrogant.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. even if you pay attention to the coffee scene, in the pilot it seems more likely that it could be a misunderstanding. Because in the way that she's not being so obvious as she is in the actual episode.
Yes, yes.
So it could, in the way that she formulates, in the way that, you know, he does not really pay attention, it could be a misunderstanding. So it does not make him out to be quite the asshole that he is in the actual scene.
It's funny. It's almost like, I kept actually thinking of Elementary, the Johnny Lee Miller show, where obviously many, many differences, but you have, in some ways, a more... for lack of a better word, normal, which I don't really like that word, but, like, he's not quite as outside the norm, outside average, say. And I think in the pilot, that is true. Like, you aren't seeing quite as much of that sharp, that really razor-sharp edge to Sherlock. And I can understand either side of that. I think, I mean, I saw the aired episode first, and I tend to prefer it, but it is interesting to see a Sherlock Holmes who isn't coming across quite as arrogant, at least at the beginning, although that questions, we have a bit more of a character arc with, you know, with the aired series, where he starts out somewhere and ends up somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting... thing. Okay, so we have, obviously, we do still have the iconic Sherlock Holmes addresses 221B. Can't lose that. Really great moment.
Well, then meeting, and then Baker Street. Which is really funny, because Mrs. Hudson is definitely checking out Sherlock's bum.
She is, totally!
No, she is, she is. There is no... Yes. There is, like, watch it. You cannot deny that she is.
And this is why, it's interesting because they kind of break, I mean, it's similar, but you do have a slightly less acerbic meeting where he makes some of the deductions, but he's a little less like, you know, I don't know, he's a little less of a jerk in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have kind of a similar meeting with Mrs. Hudson where you still go, this, you know, there's something, there's a history between these characters. Yeah. Although it's a little less jarring. I feel like in the aired episode, he's been so acerbic that when he hugs and kisses Mrs. Hudson, you're like... What? Oh my goodness.
Yes.
He actually likes someone.
Yeah.
In the unaired pilot, I found myself thinking it kind of went with the character, so it wasn't quite as like, wow, but that could be because I was expecting it also. And yes, Mrs. Hudson is very excited to see John Watson in all respect. It's so funny because I always shout back out to the newer Russian series where John Watson and Mrs. Hudson are like an item, and she's like desperately in love with him.
Oh.
And I kind of love that.
One thing about the pilot as well is the Speedies isn't Speedies; it's Mrs. Hudson's Snacks and Sarnies.
Yes.
Which I find that really interesting because obviously they were trying to get around the idea of, okay, what would be a modern housekeeper? Because, you know, in Victorian times, yes, you can have a housekeeper for, you know, two unmarried men. In modern London, maybe not so much. So what do we do? Oh, okay, she owns the shop downstairs.
Yeah. Yes.
And obviously they kind of got around it in a different way in the aired series. But it's interesting to see that as an attempt at doing that.
Yes. Well, and I think too, one of them said that they see it as she takes in mending or something like that. She's a seamstress tailor in the modern series.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting thing to see that. I had forgotten about that and I was like, oh, right, we have a different thing going on here.
Yeah, because yeah, and in the modern series, well, not the modern series, in the Aired series, it's just the constant joke of, you know, I'm your landlady, not your housekeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. That comes up really quickly in the Unaired pilot, because they come in, the flap,
Can we talk about this flap that is such, like, Sherlock is such a 90s kid? Like, can we just, the lamb, the red lamb... And oh my god, and the star painting and everything. Like, he's so 90s, it's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most jarring things, I think. One of the biggest differences is when they come in the flat and Sherlock's stuff is already there, and there's like the it'll be great if we get this cleared out. And Sherlock is like, no, this is all my stuff. Great moment where he sticks the letters on the mantle and stabs them with the knife. But yeah, I mean, massively 90s kind of ex, again, your grad student, like ex student flat kind of thing.
Yeah. Like in a flat that is obviously Victorian, with a lot of things in it still being original, apparently. It's a really strange style that the flat is in, and it looks almost pink. Of course, there could be sort of, you know, a very overt reference to the title of the episode, but it just looks a bit wrong for two men living in a flat.
Yeah. It kind of looks a bit like a boudoir. Yeah. I can never get over how red it is whenever I watch the Unaired pilot. I'm like, but Baker Street's so red.
Yes, it is. It's just so funny because it gives such a funnier context to Mrs. Hudson's whole thing about if you're needing two rooms and all that.
I mean, exactly.
The pilot in general is more is funnier that way, but yeah, it's a weird flat. Mm-hmm. It looks red. It's odd.
It's really strange.
It's really strange.
And you can see, and I love that, you can see on Martin Freeman's face, or well, John Watson's face, when he comes in and he looks around and he sees beyond all that crap. when he's honestly thinking this could be quite nice. You know that he's just as disturbed as we are, but you know, he's open minded and he manages to imagine what this flat could be when they move in. So it's even funnier. You know, when Sherlock basically admits that, you know, it's all his shit. In the real episode, I mean, the flat's, you know, despite being, you know, quite full of stuff, but it's amazing. I mean, it's a flat that is actually, you know, a flat that looks like, you know, a 20-something person lives there.
Right. It's definitely, I think that was definitely a level up. We would all pretty much agree for the Aired, you know, bigger budget, better, you know, everything kind of thing. I mean, it kind of looks like they raided a prop closet.
Everybody bring your favorite piece of furniture.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So one thing we don't have is the press conference with Sherlock texting everyone.
Yes.
We do have a cut to Lestrade and Anderson. Mm. Having a short conversation where they give us the same information, which is that there's been these supposed suicides, there's been another one, and Lestrade says he wants to call in Sherlock Holmes. He doesn't say the name, but we know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Anderson, we can already see not having much fun with this concept.
Yeah, but not as spiteful as he is in the real series.
No, he's more fail than spiteful.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I love the shot of it, because even though a lot of the art that, you know, the camera work does in the real episode, what I love is that you can see that it's cold, right? Because you can see everybody's breath, and you can even see the dust in the air. And I love shots where you can see that.
Yeah.
And this is the first thing we see about Lestrade, sort of in this house, in this you know, house with that person.
Right.
And so it gives this feel of, you know, it's cold, nobody really wants to be there, so you really feel where they are. I really love that moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. So, kind of they're getting settled, or at least looking at the flat, and Mrs. Hudson says, thought that would be up your street, and all of a sudden, Inspector Lestrade is up the street.
Oh, and can I just cut in there? Because it's a really neat canon reference, which they completely left out in Study in Pink. Because, I mean, in the first two chapters of... Well, actually, in the second chapter, I think, of Study in Scarlet, John Watts is constantly trying to figure out what Sherlock Holmes is doing.
Yes,
so even
yes,
just asking, you know, what is your street?
What is your street?
Is that, you know, is that question which he has constantly, which I don't think he really asks. I mean, he does ask him in the taxi then, and that's, you know, what is it, what you do? But there is no repeated asking. So I think the pilot is in many ways has many more references to the canon.
Well, and it even has that moment that I think we've already passed chronologically where Holmes is at his computer
and
he's responding to emails, and there's like a bunch of canon references right there. Yeah. And there is a mention of Mycroft. Yes. He is emailing Mycroft there at one point.
Which a really strange email address. He's like something like D-Sucks or something.
Yes! I was reading those and I was like, I totally forgot how like randomly hilarious.
Yeah. And Lestrade's email address is just, you know, it's not an official email address. It's like Lestrade at Strad. That is like the account that he has. It's amazing.
You have to figure that's one of those like throwaway things in an unaired pilot. They're like, this is not going to go to series. We can edit that out. You know, in digital, change that, whatever.
We'll fix it in post.
Exactly. So, right. So we do have Lestrade coming in and appealing to Sherlock Holmes to kind of give us the first real window into their relationship with each other.
It'll just be a moment of silence after this.
Obviously, Rupert Graves, awesome, great guy, great Lestrade, you know, says he needs Sherlock Holmes. Pretty similar to what happens in the aired episode. Holmes tries to leave Watson behind and comes back. Same, I mean, that's a very lifted, same thing where he has... John has the exchange with Mrs. Hudson where he kind of freaks out about his leg.
Yeah.
And then Holmes is back and all of a sudden we start getting a John Watson who starts forgetting that he's supposed to be injured.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and I guess we do have a scene with John and his therapist at the beginning, played by a different actress, where she does ask him about the blog, and we know that he's not writing on it yet, but we do know that he has it already at this point. So we do know that he's already a writer, I guess.
Yeah.
Supposed to be. Although he's not doing it, but he's supposed to have this blog already at this point.
Yeah, and he's just, oh yes, and that's probably why he offers to write things down at the crime scene.
Yes. So, yeah, so then we end up at the Lauriston Gardens crime scene where everyone is wearing forensic jumpsuits.
Which is hilarious. Which is the funniest thing to me in the entire pilot. Is that Sherlock Holmes is actually getting into one of those things. Which he doesn't in the City in Pink, where he refuses. But John has to anyway.
I feel like it's probably more realistic. Obviously, at a real crime scene, everyone will be in those. I feel like it is more character realistic for Sherlock Holmes not to be in one, so it makes sense that they lost it, although it makes sense originally.
Yeah, to have them on, but it's just really funny because they just look really silly, and like,
they
whenever I watch it, I just think, you know, this is a meme, somebody just needs to put in, you know, different words.
It's really interesting, sort of, as a character choice, the kind of character choices they ended up with in this unaired pilot versus what they then chose to, you know, keep and chose to change for the aired version, because for this, because I, you know, if you read the canon, you know, there's not on every like other page Holmes is like, oh, you know, you've ruined the crime scene, you know, because your plots have already been over it, you know, it's all ruined, I can't, you know, I can't do anything with it, you know, because you've already been here. So from that point of view, I think it totally makes sense that he would wear one. But then again, you have that power sort of struggle between, you know, I'm the unofficial dude and I can do what I want versus we are the police. We have to follow the rules and get to a forensic jumpsuit.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's actually a really good point because it is, in a way, it's different because he does sort of have his own. In the canon, you have Sherlock Holmes is almost the originator of forensics. Like, don't mess up the crime scene versus in this, a whole sort of established thing, which makes it different. I mean, I feel like what they chose to do is almost give Sherlock a uniform in the aired series. So it's like we rarely really see Sherlock Holmes out of uniform in the sense of how he's dressed. Mm. So especially that early in the episode, we kind of are still establishing this is Sherlock Holmes. This is what he always looks like.
Yeah, and well, obviously, I mean, Anderson has taken on the part of taking care of the crime scene, so even though he's useless, at least, you know, he doesn't, you know, he's making sure that he, you know, that the crime scene isn't contaminated, and I think nowadays it would not make sense to have Sherlock Holmes go and be like, you know, people trampled over, you know, the footsteps, because they wouldn't, because forensics is now a thing, which it wasn't back in the day.
And that's a weirdly meta thing, if you think about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's kind of influence in the origination of forensics. Mm. Like, would it exist? It's a weird meta circularity there.
Yeah.
Would it exist if Sherlock Holmes hadn't existed to the same extent that it exists now? It's an interesting thing. So one big thing we're missing in this scene, we don't have the text on screen.
Mm. Yes, exactly. Yes. Oh, it's something else which
that gives us Sherlock Holmes's deductions.
Yes, and he's just narrating it through. But can I just cut back to Anderson for a moment? Because when I was rewatching the pilot, I started laughing at the point where we have the implication of Sally and him.
Oh yeah,
because obviously, right? If you think of Mycroft in Buckingham Palace, where he's making fun of Sherlock and saying, you know, don't be alarmed, it has to do with sex. But Sherlock, quite obviously, you know, knows what a blowjob is because he's, you know, he's deducing.
Right.
So it just made me laugh because Mycroft obviously, you know, has no idea.
Right.
He has no idea of Sherlock's real life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, sure. Well, and we have obviously we have a different Donovan. We don't have the amazing Bennett Robinson yet. So Sally's Sally's kind of more of a uniform cop in this.
Yeah.
But she's serving a similar purpose, obviously. She doesn't like Sherlock Holmes, wants to warn John Watson off. As they're kind of going into the crime scene, you have that same, you know, kind of funny, you're wearing the same deodorant, oh, it's vaporized. Yeah. Burn moment with Sherlock.
Exactly, right? So he does, I mean, he quite obviously knows what happened.
Right.
Which is also, again, much closer to the actual canon, because, you know, Sherlock Holmes knows life. So it just made me laugh, because Mycroft, you know, by saying that, I mean, maybe he just wants to embarrass him, but in the end, you know, it just shows by how, even though he, you know, he's trying to somehow control or, you know, constantly watch his brother, he has no actual idea who his brother is, which I found really revealing. I don't know if it's on purpose. But, I mean, you know, since both episodes were written by Steve Moffat, I think, he must have, you know, as he is, he must be aware of what he's written in the first episode.
Well, and I agree with that. Well, and I think that's also true in, which we're, I know we're, I'm jumping ahead a little chronologically, but when we get to the dinner scene where they're talking, Sherlock is obviously very aware of what John is talking about and has like thought about this in relation to himself, so you know
it's, so he's much more aware than Mycroft thinks.
Right. Okay, so we have the whole deduction, but we don't, he, you know, we have this kind of nasty exchange with Donovan and Anderson and then putting on the funny suits, and then we have the whole kind of very similar to the original scene, although without the stylized text on screen of the deductions.
Mm. And Sherlock speaks a bit slower in the pilot, which again makes him a bit different. Because, I mean, he's just, you know, he's just being a machine gun in the original. Like, I know that a lot of people have difficulties even understanding what he's saying because he's speaking so quickly. And he's slow, but he's still, I mean, super quick. But he's not as quick as he is in the re-episode then, so you can definitely follow what he's saying much more.
It's true. That's a good point. Well, and thinking about John, poor John, writing it down, he might actually have a hope of getting it down. And I mean, I do think if when we have this on screen, that kind of gives us a way to follow when we can't follow maybe auditorily as easily, obviously. But very, you know, in the main, similar kind of a thing, where the ultimate takeaway is that there should be a case, a pink case, and there isn't one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're kind of at the same point in the case. Obviously, at no point in here do we have Mycroft approaching John Watson, kidnapping John Watson with an attractive woman.
No, but we do have Batman.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. We have to talk about that. Okay, we have to talk about that. So, Holmes leaves the crime scene, leaves Watson there, Watson walks out, Donovan's kind of like, haha, sucks to be you. he walks over and go, let's talk about this amazing moment that didn't make it to the aired episode.
For good reason, by the way. But, I mean, Lance Sherlock has just said that, you know, or at least implied that he's gonna be back, which he's not gonna be. But he is still close by on a roof in front of the moon, and the clouds have just broke open because it has been raining until then. And John Watson is just staring at him from the street and having, like, it's such a comic book moment, right? He's like the girl. He's looking up at the hero and smiling, like having this half smile, this fascination. And Sherlock's like, he seems, he possibly sees him, but, you know, he's too preoccupied looking for the pink suitcase. So he's just looking around, but it's just the funniest. I mean, it's too much. It's so much, too much. But it's perfect.
Yeah, well, and the music is very different in the other pilot. We do have the theme, but it was remixed much more awesomely for the aired episode. And the music at this point is kind of this electronic, like, swelling thing. And it's like he's Batman, and oh my word.
Yeah, you
Which, for the record, Stephen Moffat still defends that shot and says that he likes it.
I love it, but I suffer from so much secondhand embarrassment when I watch it.
It's just...
You always want to caption it "hopeless fangirl," you know?
Exactly. Like, that is the moment. Yes. If there is a moment, that is the moment.
Yes, yes, that's the one.
Yes, totally. It's truly amazing and truly horrifying, and we're glad it exists. We're glad it does
exist. It's like
exist
a thing. It's like it's too intimate. We should not, you know, be part of this. We should not be allowed to see this happening. This is what it feels like. It's like, oh, okay.
This is what I didn't write on something here.
It kind of is an issue with how much does John Watson trust Sherlock Holmes yet? I mean, arguably, it's kind of emotionally misplaced, in my opinion, because, you know, we have yet to have conversations and things where, you know, in a minute here, we're getting to John Watson going, why in the world do you have this dead woman's suitcase in your apartment?
And he's just been told that he's a sociopath and a psychopath.
Right, and he's still wondering about that because they have a conversation about it. So I think, emotionally speaking, that's a really strange, awesome, but very weird moment. So, So then we have John back at his boring, sad prison apartment getting this...
These text messages.
Baker Street, if convenient, if inconvenient.
Yes. Which I still love because there was
which is obviously a huge canon reference.
Yes, and it's so much more, he's so much more, like, he can see him fight, which is, again, a moment which I think is lost a bit in the real episode. He knows that and I think it's also, you know, he knows that his life's gonna change in that moment.
Yes.
It's like, you know, he's in this terrible apartment, and he's getting these text messages, and he is ready to, you know, he's ready to get ready for bed, and he doesn't. So he, like, after he gets the first text, which says, you know, come, if convenient, and then he just decides to ignore it and starts taking off his shoes, or keeps taking off his shoes, which he never really does. Then he gets the second one, and then he just, you know, he stops undressing and walks to the window. So he's, you know, externalizing the fight with himself, which we don't really have in the re-episode.
And then he sees the
danger, and then he goes... Yeah, I mean, he's
brilliant. As I was saying to Maria while you were falling off the internet, Amy, if Lindsay was here, she'd have to have something to say about it from, like, a hero story, call to adventure kind of perspective, because that's, like, the classic call to adventure no hesitation, but okay, yes, I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, and also maybe an indication that John Watson is not maybe as normal as people might think he is, because he's already seen what this is like, and he's going again. So this is like, he knows what he's getting into this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's scared for Sherlock as well, because then we have the taxi ride, which we don't really have in the episode as well. Where we have the slightly creepy cab driver who asks him whether he's worried about something. Where, I mean, it might have, you know, it might be the first implication that it's actually a cab driver who's...
Yes, that's... That, I had forgotten about that. And I found it really interesting, because it's almost like a... If you are, you know, super canon, you know, into the canon, it's almost like an early Jefferson Hope, like, you start to get that,
exactly.
You know, sort of vibe
it's
there.
Foreshadowing, yes.
Yes.
So then we have the infamous scene, which is missing that really iconic shot of Sherlock with his, like, steepled fingers.
Yeah.
Looking sort of like an effigy. Because, which I really love from the aired episode.
Yes.
I think it's really beautiful. Obviously, it's been, you know, screen capped and drawn and gift and everything a million times. But still, we have John Watson coming in and finding that Sherlock Holmes is not really in a very dangerous situation after all.
Yeah, and what I love about the in A Study in Pink is that just how much time he takes in ignoring John before he finally speaks to him. I mean, obviously for time reasons they had to probably cut it short in the pilot, so it doesn't come, you know, it, like, he reacts much sooner, so it's not, he's not, again, not behind the arse that he is to John in the actual episode.
That's actually a good point. Part of the reason he may not seem quite as much like that is that there isn't as much time for him to be truly horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
He does obviously have the iconic line there that it's a three-patch problem. They did get that in there because that is kind of genius, and we had to have that. And things kind of unfold, say, from there, where we end up in the other part of the flat, and there's a pink case.
And the horror on John Watson's face is amazing.
Yes, it is.
I mean, he's honestly scared of Sherlock in that moment, and I love that. I love how how much the camera focuses on John's face, much more than it does in the actual episode. But then, because there's so much more going on, as you said, Amy, it's so much more stylized, and it's paying so much more attention to everything that's happening. But the pilot is much more focused on basic things like reaction shots.
And yeah, I mean, there's almost a more viscerally emotional quality to parts of it, because it's less, the stylization makes it a little more removed, and I think arguably that is more like the stories in some ways.
Yeah.
But this gives you just that really, like, that punch, and kind of John Watson still wrestling with what Donovan has said.
Yeah.
And I do want to say, it's, I mean, we've talked about this in reference to his last vow, obviously, but what Donovan says to John, her kind of parting shot, is that Sherlock Holmes is going to be the one to put the body there because he's a psychopath. Mm-hmm. And obviously it took us, you know, 9 episodes to get there.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
She's not wrong, but she is wrong in why, because the reason that he does it is obviously opposite to his actual reasons in his last vow. And I was reminded of that watching that, because I'm thinking, she's not wrong when she assesses what Sherlock Holmes will do, but she's very wrong when she assesses his motivations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that theme kind of begins in the unaired pilot and in the aired Study in Pink, the idea that John, other people see Sherlock Holmes and they take his actions at face value, but you start to see John Watson digging deeper and not just accepting what other people say, but actually evaluating Holmes for himself. So we have kind of Sherlock doing his perching on a chair thing. We have him telling John to text, you know, text this person, don't worry about who it is. Kind of a similar take on the same scene, basically. How did you get this? You know, John Watson listening for a good explanation of why Holmes himself.
The mystery. Now, what does he say? He says something. It's really, I think it's the impossible. look right. for the impossible. Like, he's so yes. excited. He's, you know, he's like, oh, look for the impossible. And John's just like, oh, okay. Underwear.
yes.
Lipstick. Amen.
Yes, that is an awesome moment where he's like, she's got a novel in here.
Exactly.
Like,
what's the impossible?
Yes. And then, of course, it's the phone. So that's how, well, where we get that.
And then, of course, the cabbie rings. Oh, we don't yet know that it's the cabbie, but the murderer rings his phone. And then they head off to Angelo's.
Yes. Oh, and we have in there funny. More discussion of, there is a version of the scene where Holmes and Watson are in the cab, and he does more of the deductions about Harry and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. And we do have that moment. I feel like it's a little shorter and packs a little less of a punch, but where Sherlock thinks that John will be kind of annoyed about it because everyone else is, and John says he thinks it's wonderful, and we've already established kind of that John Watson is going to just appreciate this gift that Sherlock Holmes has. So that's kind of something that we've already seen. So they head off to Angelo's. Amazing scene. Let's talk about it.
Well,
do you want to start, Maria? Do you want to start? It just, I mean, the conversation they have is more or less the same conversation that they have in the aired episode.
Yeah.
But what makes me laugh about the unaired pilot version more is John's body language.
Oh yes. My word, yes.
Because there's the bit where he says, no, I'm not asking you out.
Yes.
And leans right across the table while
like,
he's saying,
I have no intention at all.
I have no intentions whatsoever.
Why would you think that?
I know.
And,
it's amazing. Martin Freeman, man.
Yeah, like, and anytime I watch it, and it's like, yeah, yeah.
And
that
he's less.
Is a thing that happened.
And he's less weirded out than he is in the actual episode. I mean, he, you know, he has a moment of, okay, I'll shut up now. But which actually is really funny because, you know, he basically says that, and then there's like 5 seconds of silence, and then he starts talking again, and Sherlock actually winces, like he has a physical reaction to
yes.
John talking because he was just, you know, he was just promised that there would be no interruption. So it's, you know, it's on that level, it's much less awkward than it is in A Study in Pink.
I agree.
Just, but yeah. it seems much more natural. And it, of course, it leaves things open because Sherlock is less offended. It's just less awkward than it is
it's
in the
It's less
episode.
Awkward, I think, and that's one of the reasons why overall in the unaired pilot, Sherlock seems less stiff and less kind of rude in a way because he's... It makes it funnier in a way, but there is a lot less awkwardness there. It's more like people getting to know each other, having this weird misunderstanding, but it has much less of the, like, I can hardly watch this, I'm watching through my fingers feeling of studying, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, both of their deliveries are quite different, and it's really interesting to think about how subtle changes make for such a massive difference.
Mm.
When in the actual version of the episode.
Yeah.
So kind of the similar thing, but deductions, this is where the pilot starts to deviate much more strongly from the episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Sherlock already knows, he's known for a while that it must be a cabbie.
Right.
It's not a thing that, you know, suddenly comes to him. But he's known, and he's basically, you know, he's already much more close again to the stories. You know, he has a theory, and he hints at it, but he, of course, doesn't tell us, because we have to wait until the end and read the rest of the story. So that's exactly what happens, where he says, I know who he is, or I know what he is. And then he, you know, and then John, of course, mentions that he has no fucking clue what Sherlock is on about. And then Sherlock spells it out for him. And then, of course, we have the white wine, what is it? Nuns, something nuns.
Kepless nun.
Yes.
Which is called back to. Cameos,
isn't that sort of in a way?
Yes. And it's called back to in Sign of Three when he says to little boy, if you, there's a headless nun in it for you.
Yes.
Which had not occurred to me.
I
because
forgot
it's been,
that. Oh my god.
It's a catch, Amy.
It's been so long since I watched either the pilot or Study in Pink, and I thought, oh my word, he's talking, that's why Sherlock has this random picture of a headless nun that he's promising to show this kid.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
You know, Sherlock Holmes, epic babysitter. so, yes, so we have...
The white wine scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I love the drunk sort of stumble across the street. I mean, that is A-class acting.
And almost,
like,
and
without almost falling on his face. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, and speaks to the fact that Sherlock does not have disguise as such.
Yes, but he can act.
Yes, that's a sort of disguise of, like, circumstance or whatever.
Mm. Absolutely. And then, of course, what I was wondering, though, is why is he giving away his address? I mean, that doesn't make sense, right? He's so careful not to give his phone number because it might be on the website. And then the first thing he says is, you know, take me to 221 Big Street.
Well, and of course, a call back to the, again, a canonical callback to Studying Scarlet that we don't get as much of in the... so we have the amazing Philip Davis, who obviously played the cab driver in both versions,
yes.
To great effect with very different context.
Yes.
So we, like you said, we have him giving him his address, which arguably is a weird, odd, strange thing to do right there. I suppose you could chalk that up to Sherlock's arrogant certainty that he's going to win in the end. And so we quickly find out that things are not going well because he's not just fake drunk, because he's been drugged.
In a creepy way, which gives us context about the drug use.
Right.
And, which we do have the notion of in A Study in Pink as well, where we have the drugs bust and...
Right,
And this conversation between John and Sherlock. But here we have just this mention, which doesn't concern John at all. He's not part of this conversation.
Right.
But we know that he's quite resistant to poisons and things like
very
that.
Very good. Very good point. And kind of a nice show-don't-tell kind of moment, because it's more of a tell thing in the aired episode, and in this version, it's a... We're seeing it.
Hmm.
So, So, Angelo, at this point, we cut back to Angelo and John. Angelo, who's sure that this is all part of the plan, and John Watson, who yes. I mean, we can give all the love to Angelo. He's an amazing, amazing character.
It's all part of the plan.
Yes. But we have John looking at this very carefully, and we see here that John Watson is indeed not an idiot in any respect, and says... not part of the plan, and starts running without his cane.
Yes, scene of
course. And we get, it's obviously it's shaved off because we have a shorter runtime. The way that we see that he's no longer using the cane is we see the cane sitting on the chair, he doesn't need it anymore, as opposed
he's
to
running.
That really great, we don't get that same really fantastic scene, which is a great addition in the aired episode where they end up talking about that, but...
Yeah.
So, all right, so we're back at 221B, and we see some great shots of Benedict in his jeans.
Sorry.
And it's...
Thank you, cameraman.
And it's, I mean, we have drug Sherlock kind of flailing around. It's interesting to me because, I mean, it has been a little while since I watched the aired episode, but we have a really psychopathic, like, it
yes, it, he's almost Milverton creepy style.
Yeah.
He's
really creepy.
I would do anything to you if I wanted to, but
yeah.
I'm just going to kill you. That is super creepy. Like,
and
that
I
gives me the creeps.
I feel like there was a character shift because the original one is that... And then, of course, in the aired episode, we get kind of the thing with the kids, and the motivation is different.
Yes.
So in this version, we have this kind of really psycho, like, I'm just kind of getting off on killing as many people as possible before I die from this aneurysm.
Yeah.
Which Sherlock obviously deduces, even though he's half out of it.
Yeah.
I think, definitely, you're losing something there in terms of setting.
Hmm.
By having it in the flat and having the lighting be what we're used to, rather than having that really eerie kind of cold, institutionalized feeling of the end of Study and Pink.
Yeah, because they're more equal in Study and Pink, I think, because there it's so... And because, of course, Sherlock is conscious, and he's made the conscious decision to follow him as well, which now, being in his flat, being drugged out of his mind, unable to even get up.
Right.
It's just unfair. Like, it seems that it's not, you know, I love what they did with Pink, that they gave... You know, that they really made it a chess game, but, you know, they're both...
Well, because in Unaired Pilot, you don't get the strong... Like, the idea that Sherlock is so risky that he will just play this game doesn't come across as strongly, because you don't get the feeling that much of any of it is Sherlock's choice.
Yeah, and I mean, like, of course, in the end, when the phone rings, right, that is the one time when he makes the conscious decision to not go, because he knows he's not going to kill him. Right? I mean, that's when he regains his power, theoretically, right? Where he could, where he knows you're not going to do that, that's not your style of murder, whatever he says. But he doesn't, because then, of course, you know, Jefferson, he asks him, you know, but you want to find out, don't you?
Right.
So it's a really short amount of time.
It is. It is. Again, I mean, it does accomplish the same purpose, but maybe with a little less power, because we don't have this whole voluntary, I'm going to go on this adventure and try to figure this out, regardless of the risks involved. So that obviously kind of, once we get to that point, shorter conversation, because we don't have him deducing, we do have him deducing the aneurysm, but not, there's no, like, the money, the family, that whole thing isn't involved. Yeah. So the phone rings, the police are on the way, we hear sirens, and Sherlock decides not to do the normal person smart thing.
Whatever shall we do with him?
And we don't... One thing that's missing there is we don't see the John Watson POV the way that we see it, which I love in Study and Pink.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I mean, what I was thinking is that it's sort of harking back at The Empty House, obviously.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
I mean, that is the thing that the actual Empty Hearse never really did, was make use of the house across the street to shoot through the window at not Sherlock Holmes. But I think it might have been the notion of that, right? That it might not even have been... I mean, that could be, you know, it could be a red herring... that it's just the one open window with the light on, even though we don't really see anyone in there, but it could have been any random window, because it takes Sherlock Holmes, you know, a few seconds to get up and look out. So it could just as well be, and from, you know, the angle of the shot, I would actually guess it would be another window. It would just be from across the street, because the view would also be much better, and then the sure angle. So I think it was just, you know, it was a harking back at that moment.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It very much, the setup of how they're sitting and everything does definitely speak to the empty house. Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that moment. We have a conspicuously missing moment here, which is Sherlock Holmes obviously kind of standing on the cab driver as he's dying, wanting to know to put him up to it. And that's not something that we have a call forward to in the pilot. We don't have the mention of Moriarty.
Yes. Which, again, makes sense, because the murders themselves are just because.
Right.
You know, for more sinister reasons. Because somehow it makes sense, you know. It gives Jefferson, I would say a better character. He's not kinder because he's getting money for his children. But the motive... is different.
He's a slightly more sympathetic character in Pink, at least.
Yes.
Well, and I mean, I would guess that if you're thinking of making six episodes rather than three, maybe you're not going to have the call forward to Moriarty as quickly as we get it in Study and Pink.
Exactly.
And guess.
Yes, and they wanted to do the great game in several episodes, and all of these are connected to Moriarty, so they would have. Concerning the plans that they had made initially, would have had much more time to build up to who is Moriarty. So
right,
it makes sense to not introduce him immediately. And because Moriarty does not play any role in A Study in Scarlet either.
Right, obviously, and we don't, you know, in obviously their linking of Moriarty is much stronger than in the canon, which we've talked about a lot. And, you know, just none of the whole, here's my nemesis that we've never heard of, because obviously, you know, the show does that much more quickly. But, so we basically have similar thing, you know, Sherlock, the police, shock blanket, you know, and Sherlock begins to do the deduction of the shooter and realizes suddenly that he probably shouldn't be that specific.
Yes. And it's really interesting because John is standing a bit further away than he does in the actual episode. In the episode, he's sort of in the, you know, there's sort of police lights in his face. So he's part of the action already, so he already is in the in circle in a way.
Yes.
But in the pilot, he's just, you know, he's just hanging out of the pavement. Yes. So yes. It's interesting because he's not yet part of the team.
It's still that's... like they're still asking who he is. There's still that who in the world are you and why are you here?
Yeah, and of course he gets rid of his gun, which doesn't make sense in terms of what's happening in the series. So they obviously changed that point.
Right.
Yeah, Baker Street is also nowhere near the Thames.
Exactly. That was thinking, like, okay, how did you get from, you know, up from that window 2 miles south?
Yeah, not
from
that,
the thing in the Thames and get back up to stand in this spot.
That's the real mystery.
John Watson.
John Watson is the Flash.
He's the Flash, yes. That's the answer, clearly.
Yeah, we knew it. But yeah, that was something that that didn't really... Well, and it kind of speaks to, I guess, the accepted incompetence of the police that, like... In the actual aired series, he doesn't need to do that. No one's going to figure that. Like, no one cares.
No one cares. Exactly.
So my headcanon for that actually is that Lestrade totally knows.
Yes. Mine too. Definitely.
But chooses not to say anything because thinks, you know, Watson's going to be a keeper.
Yes.
I'm with you. I mean, we love our, you know, Graham, Gavin. So... He's you know, he's a good egg. I that's a good headcanon. I support that. So we do have that nice moment where they go off together and they are
to eat, actually.
Yes.
Which again is funny considering that it's Moffat who wrote this part and who also wrote Scandal. But I'm just gonna leave this uncommented. But I love this nod to the canon where Sherlock makes this decision that it's Wednesday, so he's good for a bit, so he doesn't need to eat. It's much more that is lost in Studying Pink, which I find quite sad because
it's
not
as
obvious that you know that John Watson is actually making him eat. Like it is, you know. It's John Watson says he's starving. He isn't. You know, 2 hours ago he was eating at Angelo's. He is not the one who's starving. He is trying to get Sherlock Holmes to
eat.
That's
a good point. Well, and I feel like in the pilot there's a bit more of an emphasis of John early on as the carer, as the taking on the doctor role, like saying, you know, you're not going to take care of yourself, so I'm going to do that. Which obviously we do get in Study in Pink, but I think it's very emphasized strongly with things like that. So they go off together, we have the who's that, and then we have the Lestrade line that it's, you know, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Yeah. Da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
That's the end. And then we have the epic music, and we have a really funny... I mean, it's really funny when you pay attention to, I mean, the kind of the details that went into making the actual series, like the shots of London and even, you know, the writing of Sherlock and everything. Like, it is so funny because if we'd only know the pilot, it would still be really, really good. But because we know the excellence of the actual series, like, it just seems awkward.
Yes.
Like, the writing and, like, this grey, you know, it's just all a bit, you know, you can tell that it's, you know, something that grew into what it is now.
Right. It's, well, and almost I feel like the exploration of how pseudo-realistic do we want to go versus pulling it way back from that to here's this really strange guy and regardless of what time he's in, he's not going to fit. He's going to have his own uniform, his own way of doing things, his own style of his flat. Like, taking away a lot of those maybe he's a more average guy and just going full on with the no, really, he's just Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. But I love the pilot. Like, it has such a special place in my heart.
It does. It does. And yeah.
And there were like, Sorry. No, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I find it sort of emotionally, I find it truer in a lot of ways than Study and Pink. Like, the fact that, yes, they hit it off, but they're not going to hit it off that quickly that Watson's going to defend somebody that he met 2 hours ago to say, no, you're not going to find drugs in this flat.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's sort of, there's a bit more caution, and sort of you can feel they were sort of playing the long game with that friendship.
Yeah.
You know.
I would have loved, I mean, it's never going to happen, but I would have loved to see where they would have gone from that if they had done the six 1 hour thing.
Yeah.
Because it would have taken more time. And that's still one of the things that I've, as much as I love the series, I still have the most criticism for is the lack of character development, the lack of normal, as you know, or sort of kind of recognizably human character development. Right, it comes, you know, it comes in waves and they're quite unrealistic. But of course, obviously, because of the stylized kind of stories that we have in the canon as well. But I love it, yes, the pilot feels much more natural in that.
Well, we've talked about this on the podcast, but the fact that and I'm sure we will more when we actually dissect Study in Pink, the aired episode, which we will do next for this series. But the fact that you have to just sort of take it on faith that for whatever reason, John Watson, like, believes in this guy, like, pretty much immediately. Yeah. And there is, you know, just because they do focus so much on, you know, Martin Freeman's face and there's different body language, there's an ambiguity in the unaired pilot that there's a definitive shift, but it almost doesn't happen until that very end where he makes that decision.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the aired episode, we get there quicker, and it's touching and it's great, but you have to kind of supply the details there for yourself. Mm. Like, you know, this friendship is there because it's there. Like, there.
And you see, and again, it has probably most to do with Mark Freeman's acting, but when Sherlock Holmes says, or when John Watson says, you know, I'm his doctor, and then Sherlock Holmes says, only a fool argues with his doctor, and you see the face, like, you see John Watson's face, and he's so pleased. He's so happy to be right there, right then.
Yeah.
And well, I love that shot. Yeah. I love it.
I
think this is, you know, this is where it starts. I mean, of course, obviously the Batman shot, but that's something else that starts. this is really where John Watson Sherlock Holmes started. Right. Whereas I think in the Study in Pink, it is, you know, we don't giggle at a crime scene thing, which is, you know, again, towards the end of it. But because we have these moments of defending, you know, John Watson defending Sherlock Holmes before, it seems less. I mean, it seems like John Watson's trust issues are really not there.
And it's interesting because I feel like there's, in a way, the John Watson we get, because we talked about Sherlock in the unaired pilot seeming slightly less arrogant and kind of jerktastic, but the John Watson we get is almost more realistic and a little less acerbic in his own way.
Mm.
But it's almost like he doesn't come across, like, we by necessity in the aired series have to know that he has a lot of weird aspects of his own.
Mm.
And those, I feel like the development, because of the long game that they were probably planning on playing, he seems like a slightly more normal guy in a way, because the emotional kind of questioning and everything is actually played out for us.
Yeah.
So both of those kind of performances and, you know, the directing definitely shifts on both characters, not just Holmes.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's beautiful. So if you have not watched the pilot, please do so immediately.
Yes.
It is a thing that needs to happen.
It is. And it is just so much fun to compare and so much fun to think about what would the series have been had they stuck with the stylistic elements of the pilot.
Yeah, absolutely. And also what I find really interesting is, you know, it's just Lestrade's role because, I mean, I was just laughing so hard because I don't know if you've seen the interview that Louis Moffat did with his mum, Sue Virtue.
Oh, yes.
where she was talking about a standalone for this trot, and Louis was just like, he sucks, he's the most terrible police officer in the world. And I was laughing so hard because I was thinking of that in that moment when Lestat comes to Baker Street, asks Sherlock Holmes for help, and basically he just looks at Sherlock the entire time, and then only when he leaves he just, you know, sort of glances at John Watson and Mrs. Hudson, and then once John shows up at the crime scene, he's like, who is this person? And I was just laughing because, I mean, you know, he could have at least sort of remembered that he's just seen this guy in the living room of Sherlock Holmes.
He's just seen this guy like 10 minutes ago.
And I was just laughing so hard because I was like, Louis is absolutely right. This draw has absolutely no ability.
He sees, but he does not observe. Yes.
So that was just something which I think
Lestrade says that he needs Holmes, but I would say even that performance, because they had to get there more quickly, see more of the affection, like with the drugs bust and everything, we see more of the affection that Lestrade has on a personal level in the Arid episode.
Yes, and because, I mean, he's less patient with him in the pilot, probably also because of time issues, but, I mean, he gets upset really quickly.
Yes.
So Sherlock Holmes in A Study in Pink, I mean, he has a lot more time to do things, but, of course, in the pilot, it's like, you know, you've got 2 minutes, I'm breaking every rule in the book. So it's basically the same text that he has in Pink, but he gets upset really quickly when Sherlock's just starting to talk about, you know, the string of lovers, etc.
Right. And we've talked about the sort of variations in Lestrade and the canon, and it's like they kind of shifted the sort of emphasis there to more of a sort of paternal quality to it.
Definitely.
And I think you know, because Rupert Graves plays that so beautifully, so I like the sympathetic Lestrade. So.
Absolutely. And we do get parts of that towards the end.
Where
he's sort of saying, I'm going to write it down this time. So he's learning from experience. Because,
yes.
You know, and then we've got the smile when he walks towards John Watson. So we do have the sort of the fatherly, you know, contentment of, okay. And then he's teasing him, of course, right? Saying, oh, did you choose the right one? You didn't. You know, you're never going to know. So,
oh, yes. That's a really funny. I like that bit, actually, where he's like taunting Holmes that he'll never know.
Exactly, which doesn't really happen in Pink. There's, you know, more sincere things to discuss. But I just love this, you know, you are never gonna know. Like, I might not have solved this crime, but you will never know whether you were right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say that speaks to, in the unaired pilot, Lestrade and Holmes are more like bantering and getting annoyed with each other like equals, whereas in Pink, Lestrade has a much more defined, older paternal role.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, I like both. I think they both work.
Yeah, me too.
But, yeah.
And something else about the crime scene deduction is, of course, that, I don't know whether by choice or I don't know why, but the two moments where John Watson is just, you know, saying brilliant out loud, and Sherlock seems, in Pink, he seems actually shocked that somebody's doing that, and in the unaired pilot, he's really appreciative of John Watson doing this, right? There's no, like, when he says, you know, it's fine, it's like, he's really like, please keep on doing this.
Yeah.
I've never had a fan.
Yeah. It is a hint back to the canon of, like, Sherlock Holmes won't take the credit, but then when people are, like, excited for him, he's, like, super excited about it.
Yeah. Like, John Watson's excited for him, and then he's super excited.
He has this
it.
Like touching kind of this man who never, you know, cared about this.
Yeah, and I think because of, like, that, yes, because of that, it makes so much sense that when they go to Angelo, which again is much like the walk through Soho, which is probably not in Soho but somewhere else. parts of it, at least, some of the shots in Pink are much. I mean, it's only basically just one moment, one single shot where they walked down the street and Sherlock says about, you know, a genius
needs
an audience.
Yes, yes.
And John Watson's actually, like, he's looking at him for a few seconds and then says, yes, I suppose that's true. Which is much more heartfelt and much more understanding of the character than I think in Pink, because in Pink it kind of gets lost because there's so much talking going on.
Well, and in Pink, Watson seems kind of annoyed. Like, there's a sarcasm to it, dude, which is
yes, and that's not there. That's not absolutely not present.
No, Martin's delivery is very different. It's more like...
He's understanding who Sherlock Holmes is.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose that makes sense because it's compressed, so it makes sense for it to be more of a moment of discovery rather than confirmation, since we haven't had as much happen before that, I guess, because it's shorter time.
Yeah.
Well, and also we don't have, because of Mycroft not being in it, I think that really establishes John as the, I'm not going to betray this guy. It establishes John's loyalty in a really extreme kind of a way. And of course the whole, we could have split the money kind of deal.
Mm.
Like, to lose that is, it kind of doesn't give you the same development of their relationship at the same pace either.
Yeah, that's true.
And obviously not to have the lovely Mark in the episode is a pity.
It's also true. Good thing that we'll talk about Pink next.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic thing to watch them as a double, to watch one or the other and then the other one, and just appreciate the nuances. And the fact that, you know, I think I see people laughing about the pilot a lot, but it really is true that there are some moments in there that are just beautiful didn't make it because of the difference in style or tone. They didn't make it in, but they really are wonderful performances by the actors and some really nice character moments, especially.
Absolutely. I do agree.
Yeah. Other thoughts, reactions?
Hair?
Oh, yes. Oh, hair. Yes, let's talk about that.
Well, Sherlock's hair is, I mean, I get what they were doing in the actual series. Although I would say, again, the hair that he has in the unaired pilot would seem more natural for someone his age. Just as the same as the way that he closes seems much more his age. But it is a really interesting haircut. Because he's sort of, I mean, it's like an early hipster. I don't really know what to do with myself. I'm just going to go against whatever my parents told me.
Yeah,
kind of haircut. I love
it. He definitely is more of a hipster, just generally.
As I said, like, the lamp and the star painting and whatever he put in the shelves is just... beyond
hilarious.
And then, like, all the African statues that are in the flat, which make no sense at all. He's too young to have, you know, like, even canonical, it doesn't make sense that he has
and Study in Scarlet, no. We're not, like, close. Yeah. Go
it's
ahead.
It's exactly the kind of random stuff, though, that you have when you're a student.
Yeah, it's like, you bought this,
because
you
found it in a dumpster or, like, in the charity shop you thought it looked good on a drunken night out, and then you were sober and kind of, you know, didn't have the energy to carry it out again.
You visited the lucky cat at, like, 2 in the morning. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it is true in a way that, like, he has the hair and clothes and everything of somebody who, you know, he doesn't care as much about that. Yes. But at the same time, I think probably that they felt like in the aired episode, it adheres more to the whole, like, idea of the cat-like grooming and the sort of meticulousness of the... Well, and the fact that when we do meet Mycroft, they definitely are a set. Like, Sherlock and Mycroft, they're like a set of these weird, overly formal, you know, suit-wearing...
And further removed from society, or from their class, maybe.
Definitely. Yes. Definitely. Yeah.
Because there was no issues of class in the pilot, in the unaired pilot, I think.
Right.
Like, you could never tell that she's, like, from a fancy background.
That's true. Because when he says that was actually something I noticed that I didn't mention, which is when he says, I'm looking at a flat in whatever he says, Central London.
We can afford it.
Together we can afford it. It actually makes sense. Like, you feel like he's seriously means like he couldn't, which that's an issue in the canon too. Like, the question of Sherlock Holmes' income and, you know, well-to-do level is sort of a question always with dear Sir Arthur Continuity Doyle.
Not only that, we can blame Poe for it.
Yeah.
Because Dupin is in the same situation. I think Doyle was just like, oh, this is interesting. Let's just write this detective falling from grace because he's so different and his family doesn't like him anymore.
Right. But there's definitely a more of a class thing in the aired version. He's not. I mean, I suppose arguably it would have been interesting for him to contrast with Mycroft if we had met Mycroft later and he was the Mycroft that we have.
Yeah.
Versus a shirt like hipster Sherlock with like, you know. Yeah.
But even the coat doesn't seem as iconic. I mean, it does seem iconic in the Batman scene, but everything else, I mean, of course, maybe, and I think I forgot, we have to rewatch Pink, because the color is up. But the first time we see, like, in the first moment we see him opening, like, the zipper to the body bag, the color is definitely up, which does not make any sense at all. But I forgot whether it's down or up in the actual episode. But it just seems really ridiculous that he's here. He's just, I mean, it's in the same way. I mean, he just came in from outside. It's obviously cold because people are wrapped up in stuff in all the other scenes that are outside. So it makes sense that his coat is like buttoned up and the collar's up. But it's just at the same time, it just seems really strange.
Well, and the scarf, he doesn't either. I'm trying to think because I just watched this, but I was concentrating so much on like the. A lot of the other stuff. He doesn't even have the scarf, I don't think.
Oh, no, he does. But you don't notice because the color scheme again, like the color filter.
That's
I mean,
true.
It is the blue scarf already, but it's definitely a cheaper version of
the it's just not as much of a uniform. He more like throws, it's more like he's throwing the coat on, like, they definitely didn't make it as much of an
he
item.
He doesn't have, like, the swishy, deduction scene, which he does have in Pink, where deducing, you know, the Pink Lady, he's Jennifer Wilson, he's like walking around and swishing his coat back and forth.
Right.
You know, he's doing like the prancing thing, which he doesn't get to do because he's wearing the freaking blue.
Right. Honestly, that is an incredible study in the subtleties of what makes, like, a scene what it is. Mm. Like, the fact that that scene has a completely different tone because
absolutely.
Of that versus the, he looks sort of ridiculous wearing the, you know, jumpsuit. So it's kind of funny.
definitely. And and because he's wearing jeans, like, it seems, even the coat.
Yeah.
And, like, it doesn't match. Whereas, of course, in the actual series, you know, he's always impeccably dressed.
Yeah, it's sort of, there's a sense of, I bought this coat as an investment.
Yes.
And this is the one really fancy item of clothing that I have in my house.
Yes.
Versus, like, because he looks like such a graduate student or hipster or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And in the actual series, he looks more like somebody who's good at maid.
Yes.
So when the cabbie says, oh, of course I've heard of you, you believe that. Whereas, you know, In the unaired pilot, I'd have trouble believing that anyone.
That's true. Like,
heard
I'm your fan. Like, are you really? You must have obscure tastes.
Yeah, actually, that's really true. It gives you a really different feeling for how established he is as a, like, somebody that anybody would have heard of.
Yeah, and I mean, they just both. I mean, they both obviously are younger in the pilot as well, which is really funny to watch now. After the third season.
Yes.
And you just, you know, you just see what they've become and how Sherlock and John just interact with each other. Like, it's just for that, it's so amazing to watch again.
Well, and...
But they were just, you know, they were babies.
Well, and then I think having Sherlock be more casual, you don't get as much of a contrast, and it's not just a class thing to me. It's the fact that they have, like, thinking of fan art or something... Mm.
Yeah.
Fan art, you don't even have to see their faces. You can have outlines.
Yeah.
And you know whose clothes are whose.
Yes.
And you have, you know, you have the sort of Watson jumpers and, you know, he's this and Holmes is this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they're so iconic, it's almost like a superhero duo. Versus in the unaired pilot, they're very similar in their look and their taste. It's not, there's not the contrast of like, this is the Holmes and this is the Watson. Like, there's less of that to it, I think.
Yeah. I'm quite sad that they didn't take on the leather jacket that John's wearing in the pilot.
Oh, I like
the extra
it.
Series.
Oh.
Like, I love that jacket.
Yeah.
Like, I prefer it to anything else that John Watson wears
in the
series.
It suits Martin. It really suits Martin very well. But
So I would have loved if they had kept that, but they didn't.
Yeah, little touches like that. Give him the leather jacket to go with, you know, Sherlock's bell staff or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Because it makes John seem much more settled than Sherlock, actually, in a way. I don't know why, but, of course, in the actual series, we have the jumper, so we have, like, this whole stay at home, be comfortable kind of notion, which harks back at the whole, you know, Nigel Bruce bumbling Watson kind of notion. But I do like the leather jacket because it speaks, you know, it's a tell that he is out for adventure and that he could just as well wear this riding a motorcycle somewhere in Africa, you know? It makes sense. Like, you know, it just seems much more like him than what he's wearing in the actual series. So I'm kind of sad that I didn't keep it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. I hadn't thought of it like that. Mm-hmm. I like that, though. Well, we should save some of our thoughts for the actual episode.
Otherwise, we'll just be like, yeah, we've talked about this already.
Yeah, which there's so much more. I mean, we haven't even touched on the, like, missing sort of map of London in Sherlock's head and all that.
Oh, God, yes.
Stuff. So there's lots to talk about in Study in Pink, and we will get there. But anyway, this has been lots of thoughts about the unaired pilot, and we will talk to you soon.
This quotidian world has got you crying. Want you to